Thank you all for attending this evening. I think this has been a really great session. So, as I said, I will be talking about the assessment of potential human inhalation exposure to soil trace elements resulting from agricultural activity on brownfield sites like we've been talking about throughout today. So, just for anybody new to the room, what I think it's useful to start out with is kind of a definition of what a brownfield actually is. And according to Public Law 107, brownfields are real property, the expansion, redevelopment, or reuse of which may be complicated by the presence or potential presence of a hazardous pollutant or contaminant. So basically, we have a site that may or may not have something that would be dangerous to humans or the environment in general. So that's partially why we care, right? I mean, we want to make sure that, you know, our population is healthy, we're healthy, but there are also economic implications associated with these brownfield sites, right? So typically we see reduced property levels and things like that, and when redevelopment of these sites into for positive use often brings the economic level of the area back up. Also, because not even just considering economics, but reuse of vacant land can be beneficial to a community, whether it be for playgrounds or community gardens like can be seen here. So should we be concerned? We've been talking about a lot of different exposure pathways, right? So a lot has been talked about today. The main exposure pathway for a lot of soil contaminants to enter the body is through direct ingestion of soil, okay? But there's also dermal exposure that has been considered but doesn't seem to be completely relevant. Inhalation, you could inhale soil particles, and that right now is being considered to be 100% bioavailable. So whether or not that's an issue, we don't know for sure. And then we've also talked about, you know, there are certain caveats where the plant uptake may or may not play a role in, you know, the contaminant load for humans as well. Well, going back to the inhalation portion, there really seems to be a knowledge gap in this field, kind of exploring whether or not we can reasonably expect inhalation exposure to be a risk. So how much would you reasonably expect to inhale? So when thinking about soil particles and inhalation exposure risk, size really matters. There's an inverse relationship between the size of a soil particle and how deep that could potentially enter into your lungs. This graph, I'll admit, is slightly misleading, but the ACGIH, or the American Conference of Industrial Hygienists, uses three different cut points for particles and how deep they can enter into the human body. So inhalable is considered to be potentially damaging wherever it is in the respiratory system, whereas respirable particles, although they're smaller and they can enter further into your body, they really potentially are only going to cause damage if they enter into the actual lungs. The EPA uses PM10 and PM2.5, where it's basically particles less than 10 micrometers in diameter or less than 2.5 micrometers in diameter, with 2.5 potentially being more hazardous than PM10. So the objectives of my study here was to conduct a site-specific investigation of how much dust a person could reasonably expect to inhale while performing gardening activities, and then to evaluate the risk to human health that this dust may pose considering contamination with trace elements, because we do see that so often in urban soils, and kind of in the frame of lead for this specific study. So our research site, as Dr. Hadarachi talked about earlier, was in Kansas City, Missouri. It's the Washington Wheatley Community Garden. And this garden is mainly located here. This is the main productive area here. And the back portion was slightly more contaminated, so the residents didn't really deem it useful. It's not something that I would be overly concerned with based on the research that has been presented today. But so we thought this would be an ideal location to conduct this study. There were four plots labeled here as A, B, C, and D, and each one of those was 5 meters by 5 meters, and there were 9 points that were identified within each plot as located A through I here. Now, surface XRF readings for lead were conducted at A through I, so at all 9 locations within each plot before each tilling event, and soil samples were collected at 3 different depths of 0 to 2 centimeters, 2 to 10 centimeters, and 10 to 20 centimeters at A, C, E, G, and I. Okay? Just to note here, the soil texture is a silt loam. It's basically 74%, 21% clay, and 4% sand. So when we think of dust emissions, we think about the weather, right? If under more windy conditions, we might see more dust. So we thought it would be necessary to measure a number of different weather parameters. So we used kind of the small weather station we put together here on a data logger to measure temperature, relative humidity, wind speed, wind direction, and solar radiation. to characterize the soil in each of these plots, like I said before, we use XRF technology to kind of to explore the surface lead concentrations, but we also use total or pseudo-total digestion method EPA 3051A to look at soil lead as it varied with depth at those five locations. Okay, we also measured water content, aggregate distribution, and organic carbon via loss on ignition. I just got that data, so I'm not going to present it today because I'd like to explore that a little further before I present it. And also, we did imaging of the filters that we used to collect the dust using a scanning electron microscope. So the activity, we decided to start with rototilling. Okay, this is probably going to be the most destructive, or at least you know the most disruptive gardening event that you're going to take place. So we thought we'd start there, see what we got, and then maybe we could explore further if that was necessary. So I rototilled for either a duration of 45 or 60 minutes on each plot, alternating in an east and west, and then once that was finished, going back to the north and south direction. The depth was 18 centimeters. And over the course of the study, each plot was tilled a total of three times. It's important to note, too, that the first collection was occurred during the incorporation of the established grass that was at the back of that garden site, as can be seen here. And that grass is probably roughly just over a foot in height, so 6 inches. So the actual dust collection, this is a picture of me collecting the dust or getting ready to collect the dust. We used a Buck Libra personal sampling pump here at the hip, collecting at 5 liters per minute. Okay, so if you over in the course of an hour, you'd be collecting 300 liters of air. So if you want to put that in a frame of cubic meters of air, that's roughly one third. So if you multiply anything by 3.3, that would give you cubic meters. So it's 0.3 cubic meters of air. We use a 47 millimeter polycarbonate filter holder and Wattman PTFE or Teflon filters with a polypropylene support ring. The pore space was 2 microns in diameter. And these filters are very susceptible to gaining mass due to water and just ambient air, so we conditioned them in a glove box for at least 24 hours, varying a little bit with lab temperature, so 21 to 25 degrees Celsius. We controlled the relative humidity in the glove box with a saturated magnesium chloride solution, and that varied roughly between 35 and 40% relative humidity. We determined the mass of each filter to 1 microgram, and we required that the filter be weighed twice and that mass match within 5 micrograms. And the filter, when I conducted the test, was placed within 30 centimeters of my nose and mouth. Statistical analysis of the data was done with STAS 9.4. I used ProcGLM to compare the mean dust concentrations caught on the filter and ProcReg to do a polynomial regression, considering some of our different soil parameters. We use a significance level of alpha of 0.05. And the particle size distribution would actually utilize the scanning electron microscope images to do a kind of a modified particle size distribution analysis. And we used 25 frames taken in a gridded pattern, and each one of those frames is 150 by 140 micrometers. So getting a little bit to the data here. Weather conditions were fairly consistent throughout all of the study days. There were 5 days that we collected dust, and they could more or less be summed up as moderately sunny, warm, calm days. So I'm not going to go into it much further than that, but the wind speed was fairly low, so not really a factor here. This solar radiation is low because that was getting more towards the evening. But what I would like to highlight more here is the kind of the difference in when we collected these samples. So the first collections in plots A and B, so when it was still grass covered, were done on June 21st, okay? Then the next day we did the second tillage event on those same two plots. Then roughly a month later we went to plots C and D and collected the first tillage, so that was when it was grass covered. And then roughly 3 days later, we did the second tillage on those, so we could compare those, okay? And then roughly a week later from that, we collected the third tillage event on all four plots, okay? So what did we find? Well, in the filter collections, we see that with increased tillage, so, you know, going from 1 to 2 to 3, we did see an increase in the amount of dust collected on the filters after the third tillage event. Not really any surprise there. You disturb the soil a little bit more, you probably generate a little bit more dust. We did not see a difference between tillage event 1 and 2 significantly, but we definitely did with 3, leading us to look a little bit more into whether the soil parameters and things like that. Really, what's getting at this? What's explaining why we see this? So going into aggregate distribution, if you're running a rototiller through at 18 centimeters of depth, you're probably going to break up some aggregates, right? Well, in the 0 to 2 centimeter range, I apologize, these are a little bit small, we really didn't see any sort of redistribution of the soil aggregates as far as size go, between the never before soil samples, before we tilled at all, and then after we tilled the soil twice, okay? So the relative proportions of the aggregates didn't really change. But what did change is with depth. So at the 2 to 10 centimeter depth, we see that larger aggregates are now becoming more small aggregates. All right, and we see that at the 10 to 20 as well. So in the 2 millimeter to 14.05 millimeter aggregate size, that now is becoming more in that 0.42, 0.84 millimeter range. So typically smaller particles, we might see more dust emission, right? So kind of plotting that, so this is the less than 0.42 millimeter or 420 micrometer in diameter particles, aggregates with percent of total aggregates on the x-axis here and normalized dust concentration. So because we collected dust at 45-minute intervals and 60-minute intervals, these are all normalized to 60 minutes, okay? What we see is when a greater proportion of the soil aggregates are in this very small particle size, then we see more dust emission, okay? Now, it's not a great correlation, but it might explain some of why there was more dust generated as tillage events took place, all right? But what we immediately start to see with the larger aggregates that when these don't matter quite as much, and it doesn't seem to be quite as much of a correlation here. The greater correlation, however, seems to be with water content, which, again, is probably no big surprise, right? You have drier conditions, you typically see more dust blowing around. So this is kind of just showing here on the x-axis, we have soil water content as a percentage of total, and then normalized dust concentration on the y-axis again. So looking at the soil water content in the very top layer, so those top 2 centimeters, we see, when we have wetter conditions, we don't get that much dust generated, but when we have very dry conditions, we seem to see a lot of dust generated here. Think about in a concentration, this point here is probably something around 3 milligrams per cubic meter, okay? And that pretty much holds true as we go from the 2 to 10 and then into the 10 to 20 centimeters of depth. One other thing to note is the different colored points here are indicating which day or which event that these were collected on. So the first tillage events were under the wettest conditions here, and we don't see very much dust emitted. But then as moving into the second tillage events here and the third time we tilled those plots here, conditions dried out throughout the summer. I mean, it's the Midwest in the middle of July. Then we did see more dust emission then. To characterize the lead on these sites, we used, as I said before, XRF. And surface mean concentrations are very reasonable for what you would expect in any sort of community garden, right? We've set the EPA residential screening limit for children playing in bare soil at 400 milligrams per kilogram, and all of these are below that or right near it. Plot D did show elevated concentrations here. Looking at soil lead with depth, we don't see much distribution here, or much deviation. And even with more tilling, we don't see that much. So the only exception being in plot D, there appeared to be a hot spot at the 2 to 10 centimeter of depth. And then as we tilled that more, that redistributed within the whole 20 centimeter profile to show that it increased there. So tilling might actually have resulted in more contaminated dust being generated, after being tilled. Using the field emission scanning electron microscope, coupled with EDS technology, so energy dispersive spectroscopy, we were able to identify what elements were in the soil particles that we caught on the filter. Okay, here's just a picture of a pretty well aggregated, roughly PM10 particle, and what we saw was that we had high iron, aluminum, silicon, oxygen, the typical elements that you would see in soil, right? So we've identified that we do have a soil particle here. believe it or not. But what this does show as well is that we did not find any lead. Okay, now we thought maybe with the smaller particles that we might see some sorbed lead using this technology, but the limit of detection of EDS is roughly 0.1% or 1,000 milligrams per kilogram. So without having, you know, actual mineral forms of lead in the soil, then we, you know, we're not seeing, you know, sericite or pyromorphite or anything on these particles. We're seeing lead particles with probably some absorbed lead, explaining why we see the distribution that we do. Looking at the particle size distribution, so we used these images and we coupled them with ImageJ. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that technology, but it's a program that's put out by the NIH that allows you to basically take measurements on images, sort of doing size. And what we found was on those 25 gridded images, that we had 134 particles, and using these two, kind of the two different ways of delineating soil dust, we see that we have 74% roughly in the respirable fraction, or less than 4 micrometer fraction, and 53% in the less than PM 2.5 fraction. So what dust we did catch is dust that could enter pretty deep into the respiratory system, right? So these are a lot of small particles here. Now, this is kind of difficult. There's lots of numbers here and lots of things going on. So what I thought what I would do is kind of put this all into perspective so that we can say, you know, take what we have and say, okay, is this going to be any sort of human health risk, okay? So think of it this way. If the human adult body, so you or I standing here, has roughly 5 liters of blood, all right, so 55 deciliters. And the half-life of blood is 28 to 36 days, depending on that turnover in your body. Now, in order to raise your blood lead level by 1 microgram per deciliter, when the CDC reference level right now for children is at 5 micrograms per deciliter, then you would have to inhale 55 micrograms of lead, right? Well, based on what collections we have here, you know, hypothetically say we caught 500 micrograms of dust on a filter, all right? And we overestimate the amount of lead in there, considering enrichment and things like that, you know, a more conservative estimate. You know, considering these kind of elevated levels, that only results in 0.5 micrograms of lead actually entering the body, all right, considering 100% bioavailability. So, I mean, that's not very much. You would need 110 times that to cause any trouble. So that means you would need 50 milligrams of soil, you'd need to inhale 50 milligrams of soil to raise your blood lead level by 1 microgram per deciliter, all right? And to kind of put that into perspective, you know, based on how much you breathe, that means you would have to inhale 33 cubic meters of air, and you only, you know, walking around here today, you probably inhale 1.5 cubic meters of air per hour. So unless you're going to be on these sites for 10 hours rototilling, which by then you're not going to have any irrigation, you're probably not going to be able to grow things very well anyway, this probably isn't going to be a major concern, all right? So kind of to sum up, rototilling does generate dust. Big surprise there, I know. But the emission does seem to be related to water content. So although we don't want to till our soils while it's, you know, really wet conditions, because that's not good for, you know, good agronomic practices, maybe we don't want to till them under the most dry conditions either. And the evidence does suggest that the inhalation of lead and dust generated by rototilling is not a major health concern over short time intervals. But the caveat here is, too, this does require more testing. I mean, this is a very small study. We haven't taken a lot of samples here. It's not over a long period of time. But if we're also going to be developing these sites, you know, not even just for agricultural activity, if you're doing construction, you're building a house or something like that, you're probably going to be generating a lot more dust over a longer period of time. So that might be worthy of, you know, further investigation, because that might pose kind of health concerns. I'd like to thank my major advisor, Dr. Ganga Hetarachi, and my committee, Dr. Santos and Dr. Dottarco, and everybody else that was helped me with this study. So I'll be happy to field any questions if you'd like. Thank you. Dr. Chang?
No, I didn't catch it. Maybe. Do you know what season did you do this study?
This is in the summer.
Summer.
Yeah. So this was July, which is probably a little late for gardening activity. I mean, admittedly, this would be right in the middle of the growing season as opposed to on either end.
But there are once a month studies showing the seasonal variability of those parasites.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
John? Just the PM 2.5, you know, dust level, like the air quality standard for 2.5 is like, you know, 0.15 microns. So is the greater hazard here just being,
I understand what you're saying. And so for the air quality standard, I mean, that's like an ambient air kind of condition. So I don't know how applicable that is to these kind of isolated issues here. And you got to remember, too, this is right at at the rototiller, and it's not, you know, throughout the whole community. One thing I think is a better kind of metric and comparison would be like OSHA standards. And for mining, they recommend the total dust be less than 2 milligrams per cubic meter, which we would be exceeding that in a couple of these. Or, you know, kind of the more general OSHA standards over an 8-hour interval, they're looking at respirable, so less than 4 micrometer dust being at 5 milligrams per cubic meter, or for total dust being 15 milligrams per cubic meter. So we're well below those. Sir? I'm not
certain on that.
That's partially going to depend on particle size, for one, but I can't say, you know, one way or the other at this time. That's a good question, though.
There are studies on that, and it varies depending on the particle. I'm sure it's gotten to
just anything else?
Any other questions for Jay?
Dr. Jekyll?
There are other air monitors that might be better suited for work like this that may focus on the small particle size fraction or subtometers that can be hooked up to a shop vac. So if anyone else is trying to use, like perhaps in a community garden or in spring planting, that might be a easier system to do. And you can let it run all day while people are out there gardening just to see what the ambient concentration would be.
Agreed. I would also be interested to see what like a dust tract would collect. So something that's going to monitor the air over, you know, much shorter time intervals, because, you know, a lot of the dust could be emitted in the first 10 minutes here, but we're rototilling for an hour, so you know, you're kind of averaging that out. So, you know, more high resolution sampling would be necessary to further quantify those. No, but I did think about it though.
Another thing probably is look at nose function, because they've done a lot of these things with insecticides, you know, breathing through your nose and then what gets in your lungs, and there's quite a bit of absorption, which is, I mean, it's trapped.
Absorption. Absorption of the trace element through into the bloodstream.
Okay. Something to look at too. I mean, one of the things, the recommendation is, you know, breathe through your mouth.
Really?
Yeah.
I was always under the assumption of breathing through.
I was actually told that back in the day in the 70s and the 60s, and actually EPA has recommended that some of these things breathe through your mouth.
I'll have to read further into that, thank you.
But I work until I breathe through my mouth.
And plug your nose, right?
Not because of this, but because of OSHA things and parts of the air and, you know, pesticides in the soil and things like that that can do that.
Okay.
You know, you degrade those through the mouth, not through the lungs.
Or over there,
yeah. Yeah, because there's a lot of this data for actually EPA and pesticides and rodents.
Okay, thank you.